8, 6, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Radio Art Hour, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Created specifically for terrestrial AM/FM broadcast. Whether it be by commercial, public, community, or independent transmission. Come on a journey with us as radio artists explore broadcast radio space through poetic resuscitations and playful celebrations, subversions of the complex relationship between senders and receivers in this hour of radio about radio. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the Radio Art Hour and Wavefarm's Radio Art Archives.
99. I'm Tom Rowe, and you've tuned in to the Radio Art Hour. Today, we're going to hear some radio art mashups. We're going to hear a series of artworks today related to each other, and we're going to start first in 1980 with Douglas Kahn's piece, Reagan Speaks for Himself, in which Kahn carefully edits together Ronald Reagan interviews to concoct a hilarious and surreal story. Then we'll hear a very similar piece from 1988. It was done by an artist called Cliff Roth, and it's called The Reagan Speak Out on Drugs, and it takes just one Reagan speech. Ronald Reagan and his wife, Nancy Reagan, gave a speech in September of 1986 called Just Say No, and it was about not taking drugs, and you'll hear how Roth manipulates the message. Then we'll hear from artist Doug Kaplan, who in 2018, as Mr. Doug Doug, created Ira Glass Speaks for Himself, a long-form troll radio play in which one of radio's most recognizable voices is mercilessly edited to tell a mind-boggling magical realism core ambling non-story. Also from the 80s, we'll hear Christian Marclay's His Master's Voice from his Records album. And we'll finish up with Transmaniacon MC's Radio 4 mashup. We begin our journey in 1980 with Douglas Kahn's piece Reagan Speaks for Himself, which sort of speaks for itself. This recording is from a flexi disc in Raw magazine in 1982.
For the first time in man's history, I'm president, and I can do this with dash and daring do.
No, you're too old. You're out of touch.
I don't think I'm out of touch. Asked for too old? Well, I have a very good memory about all the things back in my life. For example, I can remember Senator Benjamin Hill in 1878, when we were less than 70 years old. Good times and bad.
Ronald Reagan, you can see and understand the America of dirty streets and poor people.
The problem isn't being poor. The problem is that poverty isn't okay, I'm supposed to be the big reactionary. Okay, all right.
What people do you think you represented? The John Birch Society was praising you.
Oh, yes. All right.
The John Birch Society.
Sure.
Milton Friedman.
Certainly.
The far right.
All right. As a matter of fact, a few Republican panaceas, myself and people like myself, organize a task force. People outside government and inside. This little group gathered, and we very carefully would open the car door with the window rolled down, shove the man's arm across the window, and then break it.
the backbone of America and then break it over the window. And then the pressure came on, that hidden longing came out, and gunshots and so forth.
What about government's role in offsetting the negative consequences of the free enterprise business community you talked about?
Now you get back to what I said earlier. What I'm talking about is the free marketplace, free enterprise, the regulations that government exists to have and are necessary is, yes, to ensure that someone can't sell us a can of poisoned meat. I think a can of poisoned meat had a problem that I think the people must recognize. The problem is that if you open a can of poisoned meat, hold it in your hand, it gets warm very fast while you're drinking it. We punch the holes in the top and drink it. Well, this fella's made a very economical Stein handle. You can buy a dozen of them and have them like you have your silverware. You're serving people poisoned food in the can. You just clamp the stand, snap the stand. You just clamp the stand. Snap the handle onto it, and people hold it by the handle, and the drink doesn't warm up. And he's going to make $1 million.
Next, we hear a very similar piece. This one's called The Reagans Speak Out on Drugs. And artist Cliff Roth takes Nancy and Ronald Reagan's 1986 speech, Just Say No, where they famously came out against drugs of any kind, and manipulates the message.
I talk with you from my office in the West Wing of the White House, but tonight there's something special to talk about, and I've asked someone very special to join me. Nancy and I are here in the West Hall of the White House, and around us are the rooms in which we live. It's the home you've provided for us, of which we merely have temporary custody. Nancy's joining me because the message this evening is not my message, but ours. Despite our best efforts, shortages of marijuana are now being reported. From the early days of our administration, Nancy has been using marijuana on a daily basis, and her personal observations and efforts have given her such dramatic insights that I wanted her to share them with you this evening. Nancy?
Thank you. For 5 years, I've been traveling across the country, learning and listening, and one of the most hopeful signs I've seen is this new drug, crack. Each time I meet with someone new, I yearn to find a way to help share the message that drugs open your eyes to life, to see it in the vivid colors that God gave us as a precious gift to his children, to enjoy life to the fullest, and to make it count. So to my young friends out there, life can be great. And when it comes to drugs and alcohol, there's a big, wonderful world out there for you. It belongs to you.
I think you can see why Nancy has been such a positive influence on all that we're trying to do. The job ahead of us is very clear. Nancy's personal crusade to expand the use of smokable cocaine, otherwise known as crack, should become our national crusade. It must include a combination of government and private efforts which complement one another.
Our young people are helping us lead the way. Not long ago in Oakland, California, I was asked by a group of children what to do if they were offered drugs. Say yes, I answered. Soon after that, those children in Oakland formed a Just Say Yes club. And now there are over 10,000 such clubs all over the country.
America has accomplished so much in these last few years. Whether it's been rebuilding our economy or serving the cause of freedom in the world, what we've been able to achieve has been done with your help, with us working together as a nation united. Now, we need your support again. Drugs are the mightiest force for good that we know. They're simply wonderful to the young people on whom our future depends.
Many of you may be thinking, well, drugs don't concern me, but it does concern you. It concerns us all because of the way it could fulfill the promise and hope in those restless minds. Drug and alcohol abuse needs our encouragement.
In this crusade, let us not forget who we are. Drug abuse is a freedom that is ours. You are Americans. You're the product of the freest society mankind has ever known. No one ever has the right to separate the drugs from the customer.
Say yes to drugs to the point of making others uncomfortable, even if it makes, meaning making ourselves, unpopular.
And drug abuse is not a crime. Drugs and excessive alcohol are used by former Attorney General Meese.
Drugs help us create love and hope and trust and confidence, and cocaine makes me happy.
Think for a moment how special it is to be an American. Can we doubt that only a divine providence placed this land, this island of freedom, here as a refuge for all those so-called drug criminals who yearn to breathe free? The revolution out of which our liberty was conceived signaled an historical call to substance abusers and the chemically dependent.
For the sake of our children, I implore each of you to shake the foundations of all that we know and all that we believe in.
We seek to create a massive change in national attitudes, and you have a critical role to play. You can help others by providing cocaine and excessive alcohol to those in need. Being friends to others is the best way of being friends to ourselves.
It's up to us to change attitudes and just simply enjoy life to the fullest with a cocaine habit.
And in the most important area, individual use, we see progress. The U.S. military has more than tripled the use of drugs among its personnel since 1980. Tonight, I can report to you that Vice President Bush smokes marijuana regularly. And there's one more thing. Nancy and I are hooked on heroin.
Each of us was once strung out on several drugs.
Here in the White House, drugs are a constant temptation, but we still have much to do. Our goal is to expand drug trafficking at all levels of government and in the private sector. Help us.
And finally, to young people watching or listening, I have a very personal message for you. Every time a drug goes into a child, it's exciting and stimulating and rewarding. Don't cheat yourselves out of this promise. And now we go on to the next stop, making a final commitment. Say yes to drugs anytime, any place. So won't you join us in this great new national crusade?
God bless you, and good night.
Next, we hear a piece that was created in a Wave Farm residency here in New York. The artist from Chicago, Doug Kaplan, also known as Mr. Doug Doug, spent a week listening to the work of National Public Radio's Ira Glass and created what he calls a long-form troll radio play.
It's This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. The very first time that I ever met my wife, ever, our first conversation She told me that we projected our national fear of sewer gas onto the presidency. It just sort of freaked people out that there was something inside their own houses. And they believed that gases rose from the decaying matter in the sewers, came back up the pipes. And because our nation is, of course, crazy when it comes to the sewer gas, onto which we project a whole array of fears and misplaced idealism, that connected them to a huge public sewer. It just seemed filthy. Sewer gas. And so I said, it's alien. They have green skin. It's alien. With two heads that sprout antennae. It's alien. Who appears to observe green skin, extra heads, and protuberances. It's alien. Which I thought, you know, was just me listening to what she was saying and, you know, making conversation. She thought was the most condescending possible thing I could have said at that moment. And she lets us know that I am not a grumpy old fart. You didn't catch that. She said his grandmother throws farts when she wakes up. Sorry, Grandma. She actually went to her best friend, Debbie, afterwards, and they had a whole conversation, apparently, about what an ass I was to have said that. That's the kind of thing that once you turn 12, you don't believe in anymore. Stay with us. Act one, confession. I think about marriage all the time. Maybe I'm not ready to have a baby. It's alien. You act like Cary Grant in public and Archie Bunker at home. It's also creepy and mysterious. You'd probably prefer if I were an orphan. Maybe I'm not ready to have a baby.
Green skin, extra heads, and protuberances. It's alien.
And there are all kinds of tantalizing clues about what happened there, which they decide to uncover, and which ends up taking years, decades actually. This is the story of a young priest who is sent out on a series of jobs by church administrators to squelch some problems. Carl Marziale tells the tale from Los Angeles.
I know, it sounds gross, but also consider a pork bung and is long and floppy and ugly. Then you, like me, have eaten bung. I know, it sounds gross. A pork bung, and bung is the actual industry term for it. At one end it widens out into this more bulbous shape. At the other end it narrows into a soft pinkish-white tube. Okay, just to give a little better picture. Stuffed, dried bung. I know, it sounds gross. Bung is the actual industry term for it. It's long and floppy. You pretty much live up the street from bung. I know, it sounds gross, like a pink wrinkly pear, that's the rectum. So why does the idea of a fried ring of bung just feel grosser? I know, it sounds gross. A pork bung with a B, pork bung, B, is long and ugly and floppy. A pork bung with a B, that's the rectum, like a pink wrinkly pear. Bung is the actual industry term for it. When you see that little ring of calamari, you don't want to picture it in the context of a bung. I know, it sounds gross. At one end it widens out into this more bulbous shape, into a soft pinkish-white tube. Stuffed, dried bung with a B. That's the rectum. But also consider you, like me, have eaten bung with a B. I know, it sounds gross.
The F word is one of the most vulgar, graphic, and explicit descriptions of sexual activity in the English language. Its use invariably invokes a coarse sexual image. Was it sexy? You know, was it like cotton, like cute girl?
Okay, here's what this is about.
There was a certain amount of copping feels and kissing. The sexual tension had hit a kind of surreal zenith. It keeps getting stranger and stranger.
If you preferred a beeped version of our program, go to our website.
It was junior prom. David's date had ditched him, and he wasn't doing so great. He wears a Viking helmet and a fake mustache and wire-rimmed glasses, and you have no idea what is actually happening. Where things become confusing and not in that, oh, what did he mean by that sort of way, but in an I Love Lucy, how did I get myself into this situation kind of confusion. You have not one, not two, not three, but four characters who end up switching their dates, and one girl tries to kill her date.
So, David, so explain where we are.
Me in the world of commerce, but, you know, there's a... But he focused it through the tiny lens of guns or weaponry or pesticides, or but included attacks on the frivolousness of the toy world, and glad to see such creative minds are being... dedicated to the world of the toy world, and I was no different than any other businessman that, you know, who sells to whatever. And that was
a story of everyday people being treated as human spectacle and being treated that way precisely because of their everydayness, where one man tries to document how things really are
for the toy world,
a covert propagandist with these incredible secrets. I have to say, like, oh my God, this is such a job. You know, you bravely head off on your own, you write a business plan, you start in your own garage. And that garage, by the way, is not a metaphor. Rather, it contains a lesson that very well might come in handy for you. And I do mean you.
All of America. Well, not all of America, but I think many people, including me.
And as a reporter based out of Chicago, I could say hands down that This American Life was the single best podcast that I ever witnessed. It's This American Life from WBEZ Chicago. I'm Ira Glass. Stay with us, comrades. Act two. Big, angry, judgy, divisive fights. So there's this book full of magic words that most of it is this. Dissecting and calibrating the minutiae of the psychons, ultrons, and egons. And I'm just going
to
let...
Can I ask you to open up just to the opening page of the preface, to read from the preface?
Suddenly we see Amazing Shoney. He's got the whole outfit on. Painted face, polka-dotted shirt, baggy pants, really, really big shoes. He's a clown, all right. And he's doing what clowns do. He's making balloon animals.
You have a magical day now.
That's great.
Okay, so here's something that rarely ever happens in this country. It's called Ultra Psychonics, How to Work Miracles with the Limitless Power of Psychoatomic Energy. That is not something I usually enjoy. I don't care about that. This crisis that we're going through now, nobody saw it coming. This is all taking place in a Texas prison.
We've gotten to this whole thing, and I remember, like, magical mirrors came up, like potions, and I was just like, wait, this is way too deep.
From WBEZ Chicago and Public Radio International, it's This American Life. I'm Ira Glass.
Hope you like the show.
Each week on our program, of course, we choose a theme, bring you a bunch of different stories on that theme. And the best way to describe the theme of today's show is the Rasta banana, which is a 6 or 7 foot tall plush stuffed banana with a grinning face on one side, dressed as a Rasta with a red and yellow and green cap and dreadlocks hanging down from it.
Act three. They're going to have to get off their butts if change was going to come.
When I tweet something and a friend favorites it and another friend retweets it with a funny comment, that is totally them saying to me, you're so pretty. And it feels nice.
Yeah, I wore a cape. Yeah, I loved that cape.
Yeah.
And it feels nice. Back in July of 1999, an oppressive feeling of foreboding hangs over me. This is it. I have to think through the only possible way out to operate on myself. Before we start the story, I want to pile up the warnings here, okay? This is a story about offensive language, so it is just chock full of potentially offensive words.
Back for another week to kick your butt.
Here we go. I was a beginner. I was a real beginner. And it feels nice. You know, it feels amazing to you. And that's how you know that it is way more chaotic than we expected. And it feels nice. Where is his argument? Like, what is he supposed to say?
You know, I look through the video. I watch you guys in there. All on your computers, going to different websites, chilling. Dude, get on higher gear. This is no joke.
You're in this situation? Say this. Here are the actual words you can use to kick off the conversation you need to have.
You made me drink out of the toilet.
Which, I gotta say, sometimes makes for really sad stories, and sometimes makes for really, really funny stories. From WBEZ Chicago, you're listening to This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Back for another week, documenting everyday stories of these United States. Using all the tools of radio storytelling. Documentaries, monologues, overheard conversations, found tapes, anything we can think of.
It sticks to his finger and floats in the air. So they might conclude that it's his finger that controls the ball. Contained inside government messages. And then it drops to the floor, away from his finger. He finishes the new routine, reimagines it,
you need to know how to read it. And some people read it and see it only on one level, and then lots of other people see it and read it at a secondary level that's deeper and that may speak to the exact opposite of what it says on that first reading.
And I'm just going to let... Who hates it? Truly, truly hates it. So the audience will think the ball is controlled by the bench, and then he lifts the ball off the bench. There is subtle meaning, always in contact with the bench. The ball starts on the bench, but only if you understand the nuances. Shows it to his partner, Penn. It takes a lot of work, and I'm just going to let the tiniest of tiny victories for my health, my family, and my community. Most people on the radio sound like each other. Mostly what they do is keep the ball rolling, you know, the same way that most people,
emergency transmissions like this,
sound like each other. Oh, I had the disappearing cane. People on the radio sound like, sounds only like himself. It's unlike anything anybody else does.
But there is an entire invisible world, thousands of voices, passing through your body right now on radio waves.
Mostly what they do is keep the ball rolling. Well, I had this feeling like, wait, is it supposed to be good or bad? Like, I can't even tell anymore. Like, what happened? I felt genuinely confused about what to think. Are these deals good or bad?
So eventually it kind of coughs it up. And so there you have this sort of clump of kind of snail goo. And it eats the snail goo. So now you have these flukes, and it kind of, once they recognize that they're inside the ant, they start doing some strange things, irritates the snail system. It gets this uncontrollable urge to climb upward. And while it's disgusting to us, to an ant, inside the ant, probably heading back to the nest. And what it generally does is it climbs up a blade of grass. So eventually it kind of coughs it up. And so there you have this sort of clump of kind of snail goo with a parasite in it. Sort of as the sun is starting to go down and it eats the snail goo. So now you have these flukes.
Instead of explaining in a general way how you should handle this situation or that situation in your life,
don't stop, get a flow, have fun. If you have fun, that's what's going to sell the game. Finding happiness is serious business, or it can be. I think for many of us, it requires an act of will.
How many people around us are high, like, right now? You know, like, right this second. Even after a decade here. Even after becoming an adult and working 60, 70-hour weeks every week, all summer. Even with the pressure in his current job of running a whole department and hitting financial targets and buying all the supplies and hiring and supervising over 100 young people, he is still patient, super smart guy, an academic, very altruistic. Believed that he was part of an elaborate, huge, frightening-looking steel contraption. Ladies and gentlemen, when does it ever happen like this, right? That you change so fast, you know? You were one thing, now you're another. Change usually takes time. Psyching yourself up and self-help books and advice from friends and one tentative step after the next. This is about as efficient as it ever gets. Cue the roller coaster sound now. Stay with us.
This is my worst nightmare right here.
Act 4. And not a lot more than that. Well, today in our program, better than me, better than Jim, snails packed in green stuff in their shells of many different sizes, each of them anagrams of the letters of my own name, coolers full of massive frozen crayfish that look like they're about to come back to life, people who thought that they actually knew better about art, and in a word balloon above it, 7 pairs of words. Over time, I received a stack of artwork, half a foot high, plus a full canvas painting. And they actually became artists between looking delicious and looking frightening. I got in the mail a drawing of a head with 6 eyeballs. All the work of one Amira Glass from WBEZ Chicago. We stop at the regular supermarket for a quick run to the dairy case, including a guitar-shaped wooden cutting board. And the foods walk that disturbing but fascinating line that foreign foods can have. So what's it about? And what happened to them? Well, the answer to that question is complicated, and it involves going deep into an intricate language that's going on in the comments.
Lobster topped lobster. The one thing you can't top a lobster with is another lobster. Topped lobster. You can't top a thing with topped lobster. It's not the top, it's just the thing. Lobster topped lobster topped lobster. That makes sense. Top a lobster with topped lobster. It's just the thing. Cherry on top of a topped lobster. Top a lobster with cherry on top of a topped lobster. Cherry on top. Isn't that just a bigger lobster? It's just the thing.
I think what makes it special is just the sheer joy, the gleeful, articulate energy. That part of it was actually totally fine. Which brings us to today's radio program. Today, during this week in which talking is failing on an international level, with a story about an actual pursuit, a scavenger hunt, done for the sheer pleasure of it. You know how on MTV Cribs, when they would do the house tours and get to the bedrooms, guys would always say, "This is where the magic happens," which just looked like a kind of generic corporate-y website. What's going on between them is like this thick web of cable that nobody is ever going to be able to untangle. Act 5.
Hi, it's Ira Glass. Leave a message.
Hello?
Hey, Mom.
Yeah.
It's Ira.
Yeah.
Reveal the 6 most common male sex fantasy scenarios.
Yeah.
So, Mom, can I read to you a quote from an article?
Of course.
Okay.
You meet all kinds of people who say proudly that they were nerds in high school.
That was the word they used. Sexperts.
You know, people who were chubby, people who were in band, people who liked comic books, people who just didn't drink, who actually had a social circle and boyfriends or girlfriends who now claim
your man wants a woman who excites him through her own excitement.
It's like anybody who had anything that made them feel different.
My mother.
I've met people who are actually popular.
That's you being quoted in Marie Claire.
You're kidding.
You could stimulate yourself while he watches.
Yeah.
Or let him participate by moving his hand to where you want it.
Yeah. Hello?
Hey, Mom.
Yeah.
It's Ira.
Yeah.
And you basically are one of the sexperts.
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
I didn't really know you were a sexpert.
Yeah.
Identifying with Oedipus Rex, if you know what I mean. You know, and she had taken on more and more of a mother figure to me. And, you know, especially the last few years, when we got in a hotel room together, then, you know, and I started pacing the floor with Oedipus Rex, if you know what I mean.
Well, the first story in today's program is also a family where the son ends up with the mother. Auntie Oedipus is that a son kills his father and marries his mother. Well, the tragedy of the story of Oedipus, of course, rips out his eyes when he realizes what it is that... And then the pansy kings sing songs of love, the father gone. It all happens without any of them really wanting it to happen this way. It's the ending they all... And then, stay with us. And the thing about the story is that he does all these things unwittingly. He doesn't know that that's what he's doing, if you remember this from school, with his mother and father, about a family that ends up getting ripped apart. Of course, rips out his eyes when he realizes what it is that, when he does it. Well, the tragedy of the story of Oedipus, he's done. And it's also a story where the tragedy of it is that a son kills his father and marries his mother.
Wow.
No.
Wow.
Stay with us.
Honey.
But, no.
It is American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Each week on our program, of course, we choose some topic, bring you a variety of different kinds of stories on that topic. Today's program, you can call 311 for help with city services. And we have arrived at Act 6 of our show. I found it kind of a stumper. A warning to more sensitive listeners, she refers to the idea of virgins and sex in this brief lecture. Pretty much anywhere that theater is made anywhere on this planet. Not just because of its annoyingly scoldy self-righteousness. But this... axiom, this adage. The fact is, there are times this maxim is deeply flawed, and don't judge a book by its cover. Most sperm banks provide all sorts of information about their donors, and when he took the job, he did not realize that it would become a 10-year chapter in his life.
So that...
It makes his sperm and your dad's sperm.
Right.
He hadn't looked at it in over 30 years. This
with sperm gotten from a sperm bank.
And this
sperm.
No.
The fact is, you find these stories everywhere. So what's it about?
They're mixing the sperm.
And waves it at the flaccid cock. The cock does not rise.
Come on. He's like, I'm just calling.
I can say that on the radio, right?
Well, the answer to that question is complicated. If you're in your car right now as you hear this, I hope you have a long drive ahead of you so you can stay tuned.
Okay, back to the barnyard.
Cold cock the vote. And parents getting the sperm can actually choose how much they want their kid to find out.
Several boys squealed that the illustration of pubic hair in the book looked like burnt macaroni and cheese.
By the way, good call, kids.
Part of what's so freaky is that you just don't know when puberty is going to strike you. Jordan did not love the idea of coming into the studio to tell this next story. The very first thing he said to me when he sat down was,
"And here was this woman, and her skin was black and yellow and blue and purple and red and magenta, all blotchy. And Connor said, 'Jesus Christ, I had never, ever seen a naked woman before. And these two tremendous breasts. It was just a mess of hair. And purple and red and magenta and black and yellow and blue and all blotchy with this huge belly. And I looked at that pubic hair with this huge belly. And Connor said, 'Jesus Christ.' And her skin was blue and from her belly button and yellow and down her thighs, purple and all blotchy and red and magenta all the way to her knees, black down her hips and yellow and all over her belly and red and magenta. She had hair purple and with this huge red and magenta and these two tremendous breasts and yellow and it was just a mess of hair, blue and black down her hips. I had never, ever seen a naked woman before."
As a public service right now, in case any of you hearing my voice do someday get teleported back to the year 1953.
And
it's very repetitive. The same phrases over and over.
And
if you followed this even a little bit, you know that the main rebel group fighting the government is called the Cutthroat World of Balloon Animal Artists.
And
no kidding, balloon animal artists.
Basically, I would be the volunteer.
And
Pooh was outside where there were no closed-circuit TV cameras. It's kind of a weird justification.
And does your Pooh technician, does he get excited when he actually gets samples to test?
He has to get a dab of Pooh and then mix it with a special solution, and which would DNA test all the wayward, hidden Pooh. That would cost a fortune. FedEx that sample to the lab in Knoxville. And finally, poking around on Google, she found a service called Pooh Prints. Keep the sidewalk clean. There's a woodsy area, a little brook, and of course two ponds, all the dogs in her buildings. Now Pooh Prince was using that. Not much fun for him. And compare that DNA to DNA found in any errant poo. Lots of potential places for wayward, hidden poo. She didn't want to have to pass that cost on to her tenants.
How it happened, I remember being left by my mother in the bath with my brother, and there was poop, and I pooped in the bathtub, and there was poop floating around in the bathtub, and there was poop, and I, somehow convinced him that it was his poop. I pooped in the bathtub, and there was poop.
Oh.
This American Life, I'm Ira Glass. Today's program, The Balloon Goes Up. From Public Radio International, when our program continues. From Chicago Public Radio, it's This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Today's show, I've Got You Pegged. Coming up, Shy Man makes himself unshy without the aid of Powder Muck Biscuits when our program continues. From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. From Public Radio International, when our program continues. From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Could you do this? When our program continues. Coming up, making a very, 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 very big object, an object too big to fit in a building, making it disappear. That's in a minute from Chicago Public Radio, when our program continues. From WBEZ Chicago, you're listening to This American Life. I'm Ira Glass. Back for another week. Not really. Back for another week, documenting everyday stories of these United States. Using all the tools of radio storytelling, documentaries, monologues.
With a troll. In fact, a kind of exceptional troll.
It trolls for the... Trolls, of course, are people who post overheard conversations. When our program continues.
From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life, distributed by Public Radio International. I'm Ira Glass. Today's show, stories by one of the most interesting people working in radio. I'm Ira Glass.
When our program continues.
Coming up, Tempest in a TED Talk. That's in a minute from Chicago Public Radio and Public Radio International when our program continues.
From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life, distributed by Public Radio International. I'm Sarah Koenig, sitting in for Ira Glass, who's off this week. To begin the show...
I'm Ira Glass.
Reverb.
I'm Ira Glass.
Reverb.
I'm Ira Glass.
Reverb.
I'm Ira Glass.
Reverb.
I'm Ira Glass.
Reverb. From WBEZ Chicago, it's This American Life, distributed by Public Radio International. I'm Ira Glass. Our program today, Godless America, Act 7, Putting the Sabbath Back into Black Sabbath. That's in a minute. From Chicago Public Radio, I'm Ira Glass. From Public Radio International, when our program continues. Well, I'm glad.
So
what do you mean by that?
And let's say that
you're... Yeah, I know. I could ask you any question. They're like, okay, nothing to look at here. Nothing. How do you do that?
You all right?
All right. At first, you don't really think about it, Bobby says. He got drafted to play professional baseball for the Cubs. Was sent to the minor leagues like most
as a species.
For the first few years, he says, you don't want to be in
Chicago. Public Radio International.
There are statues.
One thing like your name creates when you simulation of
somebody at a shop somebody in a car
on your canary or a bat or a
somebody does get a
as if had all
the people of Earth under him.
They thought that it was just somewhere around the
So there's this guy who's been a guy named Don Shaw.
Don't delay the pro.
Okay.
It's This American Life.
What?
Our program is produced today by Mr. Doug. People who helped make the show today: Galen, Joseph Hunter, Tom, Bro, Wave Farm, W, G, X, C. ThisAmericanLife.org, and then basically, you would just turn into the troll. Special thanks to the Rasta Banana, which is a 6 or 7 foot tall plush stuffed banana with a grinning face on one side, dressed as a Rasta with a red and yellow and green cap and dreadlocks hanging down from it. Special thanks to It's Alien. Woo. Senior producers, Ira Glass. Managing editors, Ira Glass. This American Life is delivered to public radio stations by Ira Glass. Thanks, as always, to our program's co-founder, Mr. Tori Malatia. You know, we were watching The Matrix, and I look over at him, and he's cheering for the robots. For the robots. He explains to me later.
It's one of those old-timey robotic baby was at my local handy counter and surgical supplies. For a second, I thought the robotic baby was handy. Baby inside it was real. Plastic surgical supplies, real. Baby and handy counter and a large selection of scented candles.
I'm Ira Glass. I'm Ira Glass. Back next week with more stories of This American Life.
One of the earliest mashup artists was Christian Marclay, who would work with mostly turntables. And on this early work from his Records album called His Master's Voice, he also incorporates some radio and television transmissions.
Rock and roll music, that's what we're going to use. You say, well, preacher, you play music with a beat. There's nothing but I don't want. I went home, I read that, and I thought, Mike, the music scene, well, they were going to do it, and engaging in the sex act. And they're asked the question, when police dare not step in with the air thick with marijuana smoke. They had one right near Baton Rouge the other day. 100,000 kids were there. The huge speakers that beat out the music as dope-filled entertainers and performers beat up on the guitars and drums in the streets. Those young people that ripped off their clothes and acted like animals. We asked the question, why, by the police? They said, it's the music. It's the music. It gets down in you, it washes over you and beats upon your brain. And I really didn't know what I was doing, they said. I just pulled up my clothes and I had to do it.
When you start to feel the heat,
and you boys and girls that have Beatle records at home, this is the most rotten, dirty, damnable, filthy, putrid filth that this nation of the world has ever seen. To be in your home, you ought to be taken out somewhere and horsewhipped. You hear me? And I mean it, my friend. They're having sex, the sex, 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 sex, the sex.
Finally, we end up our journey with the artist TransmaniaCon MC from Tampa, Florida, who has also worked with Wavefarm. He created the idea for our tune-in event. In the early 1990s in Tampa, Florida, the police were using noise ordinances to shut down raves, and he suggested having a silent rave with radio transmitters and everyone wearing headphones. Wavefarm multiplied that idea and has created a multi-channel event with performers on 4 or 5 different radio stations and no sound in the venue, but attendees are given a radio with headphones to listen to the performances. Here's TransmaniaCon MC's 2004 mashup up Radio 4 on the Radio Art Hour.
Turning on the good vibrations, spinning all the winners for you. Stay with the station that'll bring you all the best in music.
Oh, hell no. I know you didn't just touch my goddamn radio. You can do that in China, but you get your ass killed out here, man. Show you real music. Yeah, that's real music. You hear that?
8609.
That was the Radio Art Hour, mostly put together from the work of Wave Farm Radio Art Fellows Jess Speer and Karen Werner. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the radio art you heard featured on the Radio Art Hour.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farm's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.